Hello, and welcome to The Whistler, issue number 1 for September 1988. Well, firstly, may I introduce myself. My name is David Calderwood, and I work for Dolphin Systems for the Disabled. My particular concern within the company is user support, and that's the reason that this magazine has started. It's going to be a rather untypical issue, this first issue, because, of course, we've got to go through all the boring introductions and the administration and all the rest of it. But what I'm going to try and do is split that up and intersperse it with various articles. Take, for instance, this one regarding the use of a word processor with speech output.
Well, I'm speaking now from Bridgewater in Somerset, in the home of Roger Goodchild's, and been enjoying his hospitality. And this morning I'm sitting in his lounge, surrounded by all manner of hardware and software. And Roger, what are you going to demonstrate for us, please?
Well, we were going to look at WordPerfect, I think, as a word processor. I've got it on the Opus PC here. It's in fact fitted with a 20 megabyte hard disk. Fortunately, the fan isn't making too much noise.
Right.
WordPerfect's on there, and all we do to get into it is write WP, would you believe? And away goes the disk, and in fact, it should come up. Now, it's done precisely what I told you it would do earlier on. It's now actually saying to me, if I do an Alt-L... Well, I've never dared to put Y before, so we'll try an N. And we should now have a completely blank screen, apart from the very bottom line, which is a status line, saying which document it is, and the position number, and of course, since there's no text there at all, it will give our position number as well. Let us have a look. We go into screen reading, go to the bottom, and look at that line. Doc 1, PG 1, page 1, LN 1, line 1, and column 10, because the default tab is left margin at 10. Now we there have a blank screen to take text. I just come out of screen reading.
So can we at this point enter text in?
We can indeed. We just type away. So we'll put yes. Let's just delete that S. Dear sir, what shall we say? This is a little letter to demonstrate WordPerfect. Right. Now there is one small problem here. It was not actually bleeping at me with capitals because unfortunately I had set Howl not to do so, which was a little foolish perhaps. But we now have that saying, dear sir, this is a little letter to demonstrate WordPerfect.
Excellent, excellent. Now then, supposing you wanted to edit that to change, say, the sir to madam, how would you go about it?
Well, the easiest way, of course, is to go up with the cursor keys.
Dear sir.
And find the sir.
Space D-H.
Ah, there we are.
Dear sir.
Right.
A-R.
Well, I've in fact gone to the R. I could have deleted across with the del key from left to right, but now I'm on the R. We'll go to the space beyond it and backspace over the sir.
Backspace R, backspace I, backspace S.
So we now no longer have sir there, and we will put madam instead, shall we?
All right. Excellent, excellent. That's very easy, the editing. I must say that what strikes me about this word processor is its simplicity, and yet it's very powerful. Could you demonstrate to us, for example, the thesaurus capabilities with a word such as if you wanted an alternative to the word good, how would you go about that?
Well, to get to the thesaurus, it is in fact Alt F1. But supposing I didn't actually know that and I couldn't remember, one of the great things about WordPerfect is that it's got amazing online help. F3 gives you the help screen, so I'll just hit that. And it's looking for the help file on the disk.
You can hear that.
and thesaurus begins with a T, so if I hit T and go into screen reading, and I will go down the screen because there's going to be more things than just the thesaurus there. It's going to be a little bit lower down than that. It's above that because that was top margin.
Alt-F1
for thesaurus. So we'll come out of the help and just check that I'm back in my document again. And we will do Alt-F1. The zero at the end is to take you back to the document to cancel what you're doing. Well, in fact, three was to look up a word.
Okay.
So we'll hit three and see what it says to us now.
Word,
it's asking for a word. Well, why not good? It's a useful
it's a
one.
A good enough
good word.
Word
yeah. So we'll type in good. And let's have a look at the screen now. Oh, it's going to. There's going to be quite a lot of that.
Yes. I like the well-behaved. They're very nice selection of words there to choose from.
There are a lot more. I switched off the synth, of course. There are quite a few of them for the word good. And then, of course, you have the options to replace or whatever.
Yes. So we've got the thesaurus. Perhaps I wanted to run before I could walk. Do you have any form of spell-checking facility on WordPerfect?
There's online spell-checking, but unfortunately it doesn't bleep at you when you hit a wrong word, which is rather unfortunate. It's got an extremely comprehensive dictionary.
Really?
I don't know how many words there are in it, but it is vast.
Yes. So the idea is that you would check the spelling at the end of writing your document.
Yes.
And how would it flag the incorrect spellings or the ones that it casts doubt upon?
Oh, let's put a word in at the end of the text here. How about elephant spelt with a spelt with an F?
What a good idea.
That's there in the text, and the option for the dictionary is Control F2.
Okay.
And it gives us a series of options. We'll go to the bottom and just see what they are. Well, there are quite a few options there, but the one we want is three. For checking the entire document.
Right.
And what happens is any word that it comes across doesn't match a word in the dictionary is thrown up in inverse video. So we just do a little bit of clever stuff with Howl here. God bless Mr. Blenkhorn. Mm. I have just done that sleeping again. Restrict to inverse. Now, if we read the screen, it has found elephant.
So elephant is highlighted in inverse.
Yes.
So what do you do now?
What do we do now? We ask it to replace it, don't we? And that was, I've forgotten what the choice is for that, actually.
I think it was five.
It is five, yes, that's right. So if we hit five, we should now find that, I'll just read with our cursor. Talking to me. Of course, we've still got restriction on, haven't we? That's why. Right. Now.
Word pattern, go, word letters go.
It's asking me to do something else, isn't it? Oh, it's because it's found the elephant.
Yes.
Spelt with an F. So I will type in that elephant. Elephant, E-L-E-F-A-N-T, and let's see if it's actually found anything. We go into reading.
It'll be there.
Well, there we have, yes. It's found elegant and it's found elephant.
Right.
Now we want to replace our elephant with an F, with an elephant with a PH.
Yes.
And the choice to do that was B.
Yes.
So if we hit B, we should now find, hopefully, that elephant in the text has got a PH in it.
That we
don't want. So we'll go back. It should actually have thrown us straight back into the text, but
dear maiden, this is a little letter to the straight word perfect dear elephant.
Yes.
Oh, there is elephant. Yes. So let us see how it's spelt it. Mm. So we go to the end of the line and cursor backwards over our elephant. It has replaced the F with a PH.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much indeed, Roger. Obviously, we've only just seen the tip of the iceberg here by looking at entering text, simple editing, and the thesaurus and dictionary, but it seems to be a very powerful package. Any ideas on prices? I know this is a very variable thing, depends where you buy it from, offers, etc.
Well, it is, as you say, a very comprehensive package. You can do all the things you'd expect to be able to do with a word processor, obviously, and including things like indexing and chaptering and contents generation and all this sort of thing, plus all the bits and pieces like summing numbers in columns and rows and entering them into your text and this sort of business. But those are quite sophisticated things which not everybody perhaps would necessarily require. So WordPerfect in fact comes in various forms, from the very simplest word processor to its the real McCoy. I don't know how many versions there are, but certainly you can get one for about £50-60, I think.
Really?
And
yes.
I think it goes up to something like 300 or 400.
Yes. Yes. Well, thank you, Roger. I've enjoyed the demonstration and your hospitality as well. Thank you so much.
Pleasure, David.
And believe me, the hospitality that Roger, Judith and daughter Lisa lavished upon Rita and myself really was superb. Okay, let's talk a little more about the magazine now. First of all, what the magazine isn't. It is not going to be some sort of heavy advertising material for Dolphin Systems. I assume that as you're listening to this, you're using either the Mimic speech synthesizer, or you're using the screen reader, or the soft window, or the hard window, or any of the other multitude of programs which enable you to gain access to a PC or other computer as a visually handicapped person. Presumably you've got that hardware and software already, so there's no need to try and sell you anything. That's not the idea of this magazine. The idea is to act as a forum, some sort of central point, a Dolphin user group, where we can pull information that will help us, amateurs and professionals alike, to get more out of our equipment. And obviously one of the very first software packages that most of us go for is a word processor, so I hope that each quarter we're going to have a review similar to the one that we've just had with Roger on different forms of word processors. Now, I know that some are going to be very expensive indeed, many hundreds of pounds. So the next thing that I want to talk about is the shareware concept. Now, shareware is a concept from the States where a programmer writes a program and distributes it freely. Anyone can copy it and have a go at it. And if they like it, then they pay for it. If they don't like it, they just wipe the disk clean and try something else. The payment is usually fairly small, $30, that sort of cost. And I've been through a good many shareware disks trying to find suitable packages. Obviously, some things are just not suitable for us, with lots of graphics and mouse control and all the rest of it. And I've pinpointed three packages that I really like. A shareware word processor called Galaxy, a shareware database called PC File, and a shareware spreadsheet called PC Calc. And they all work very well indeed with HAL, with speech output. And I've put together a little disk which contains a number of hints and tips on how to use these various packages. It also contains some public domain software. Public domain is quite different to shareware. Public domain is are programs which can be freely copied, and there's no payment to be made. So I think that it's worth having. So if you want that, please send me a blank 5 1/4 inch floppy disk, preferably already formatted, and could you enclose with it a suitable return postage label and stamps and a suitable packing so that it's not too much of a hassle for me to just take your disk and make a copy of mine onto it and then pop it back into the material that you've already provided and stick the label on, the stamps on or whatever, and pop it back into the post for you. I think that you'll find that that disk of interest. That dolphin-type sound, by the way, is designed to be an item separator and help you to either find or skip over articles on the magazine tape. Perhaps I should explain to you now what hardware I've got. My PC is the Amstrad 1512, and I've just recently had a hard disk card fitted to it, and it's marvellous. The transition from floppy to hard disk really reminded me of when on my old BBC Model B I went over from cassette to floppy disk. So a second revolution, it's marvellous. I still got my old BBC B, but I don't use it very much because really there's so much in the way of shareware and public domain packages for the PC that I use it very rarely indeed. When I do use it, I use the old RCVH screen reader with a Mimic. And I pop the screen reader into sideways RAM, and that's the way that I use it. And the word processor that I used on that was the good old WordWise Plus. Marvellous word processor, marvellous. I use WordStar, I think it's version 3.4 on the PC. And any software that I do mention on this magazine tape, it must have a default of being PC software. And if it's for any other computer like the BBC or whatever, then I shall specify that. But if I don't make any specification at all, then the default is that it's for the PC. You may be interested in the origin of the title of this magazine, The Whistler. Well, dolphins produce all sorts of different sounds, and they're given different names. For instance, there's the blat, which is a rather nice one. But the most commonly used name is The Whistle. And so as this magazine is in some respects the voice of Dolphin Systems, we thought The Whistler would be a good name. And if you're queuing through this tape using the queue and review facility on your tape recorder, then in a few seconds' time you'll hear a whistle again. Well, now for a new voice and a bit of fun. Those of you who remember 2001, A Space Odyssey, the classic film taken from the book by Arthur C. Clarke way back in the mid-60s, will remember the name Hal with some interest and amusement. I always remember being quite fascinated by it and being told that Hal, H-A-L, actually stood for IBM, one letter back. Work it out. It does fit. I was particularly interested in that rather naughty computer, and I'm glad to say that its namesake in the Dolphin screen reader is much better behaved. However, this month, September, Dolphin is producing a new speech synthesizer called the Apollo, and I think that the voice from the Apollo is uncannily like that of Hal from 2001 and 2010 more recently. It's available, by the way, in the Talking Book library, not 2001 but 2010 is, and it's excellent. So let's listen to the Apollo and let's give it a bit of an introduction, shall we?
Would you like a game of chess?
Not likely, Hal. Let's hear you change the speed of your voice.
Hello, Dave. Would you like a game of chess? Hello, Dave. Would you like a game of chess?
And with the new Apollo, you can change the pitch as well.
Hello, Dave. Would you like a game of chess? Hello, Dave. Would you like a game of chess?
And the answer again is no, thank you. Let's hear the Apollo speaking in its default voice, which I think is a little bit slow, but it's only two keystrokes to increase the speed or change the pitch. And it's reading from Matthew's Gospel, the first half a dozen verses or so of chapter 5.
Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him too, and he began to teach them, saying, Three, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Four, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Five, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. 6. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. 7. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy.
Well, I thought you might be interested in a little preview of our new speech synthesizer, the Apollo. I'm very impressed with that pre-production model. This one, the ROM was blown on the magic day of the 8th of the 8th, 88. And it's almost right. By next month, of course, I'm speaking in August. It will be right and we'll start to market it. And by October, we should be into production. So if you're interested, please give Peter a buzz. I'll give you the Dolphin Systems address and telephone number in a minute. Just to fill you in with a few more details on the Apollo, The box itself is exactly the same as the Mimic, except that it's only got one control, which is the on-off volume. Also, there's only one input. Doesn't matter whether you input in parallel or serial, regardless of baud rate, the Apollo will work out what it is and behave accordingly. So most of the controls are actually from software, and in screen reading, using the function keys 1 and 2 control the speed, 3 and 4 control the pitch, 5 and 6 control the prosody or excitability of the voice, so you can have a very flat voice or a very excitable one. Then we go on to 7 and 8, which affect the interword spacing, so you can have each word very separate and defined or almost running into one another. And finally, 9 and 10 control the pauses brought about by punctuation. Anyway, that's the configuration in the pre-production model. It might change a little bit because there is a facility called Hyper Mode. And with Hyper Mode, it cuts out all the irrelevant words in text and reduces it to a sort of a telegram ease. So, for example, the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plane. Using Hyper Mode would sound like this. Let me think. Rain, Spain, falls mainly plain. I think I got that right, but it does illustrate to you the effect that you get with Hyper Mode, and that's excellent for fast skimming of material. I must say that the Apollo does work very quickly indeed, especially if you're using headphones. I'm quite amazed at just how fast I can take in material using it. I've certainly enjoyed reviewing the Apollo, but I don't think I've done it justice in this recording. The problem is that those recordings you heard earlier came from a loudspeaker in my study, and there was a lot of background noise. My hard disk card is rather noisy, and also it's just a microphone stuck in front of a loudspeaker, and then that was copied onto this tape. And of course, this tape will be fast copied onto the tape you're actually listening to. So there will have been a certain amount of degrading of the voice, but I hope that you're impressed. Well, I've left until last the price. We're not actually sure yet what the price is going to be, but it will be between £300 and £350 ex VAT. But please remember that although production is starting in earnest in September, there won't be a plentiful supply until October. I must apologise, by the way, for all the pauses during this particular review, because my microphone seems to be picking up Radio Austria for some reason. I don't quite know why. It fades away, and then I start to talk, and then it gets loud, so I have to pause. Well, I've just got a couple of minutes on this side of side one of this C60 to fill, and I think I'll do that by giving you some useful names, addresses, and telephone numbers. First of all, the relatively new address of Dolphin Systems. It's very conveniently placed, actually, for a dolphin right by the canal. I was there a few weeks ago, and it's a very nice office they've got now. So it's Dolphin Systems for the Disabled, Box 83, Worcester, and the postcode is WR Whiskey Romeo 1, number 2, RN Romeo November. And if you want to contact them by telephone during working hours, there is an answer phone for out of hours. It's 0905, which is the Worcester code, 723654. Now, during the month of September, Rita and I should, at long last, be moving into our permanent home. The builders have just about finished making our little bungalow look nice for us, and I'm rather loath to give you that new address, just in case anything goes wrong. And I'm rather loath to give you this old address, because of course it'll be obsolete very soon if everything goes right. So if you want my telephone number and my address, just give Peter or Paul a buzz at Dolphin Systems, and they'll give you the relevant and up-to-date information. Okay, side one ends here. Roger will be starting off side two.
Well, hello to everybody who's taking the Whistler. Aren't we a lucky crowd? My name is Roger Goodchild. I live in Bridgewater in Somerset, and I certainly hope to find one or two little things to help our editor, or would he prefer to be called a compiler, David. I hope to be able to find one or two things for him for future issues. I had hoped this time to do a little review on a splendid little gadget called the Braylon Speak, but unfortunately, Sensory Systems Limited, who lent it to me, took it away again before I could get on with the business for the magazine. But that will come up next time with a little bit of luck. It really is quite interesting. What have I got? Nothing, apart from a signature tune. Well, hello again, David. Here I am, Roger Goodchild, down in Bridgewater. My word, who is this fellow hogging the tape, you say? But you did want another voice on the thing, and in fact, the voice in question is operating all the complex engineering side of things here, because this is Pete Mead.
Hello, everybody.
And Pete, hopefully, here in Bridgewater, will be contributing to the Whistler. We were hoping to get a few voices together, those of us who are going to be contributing to future issues, and hopefully Pete will be doing... What exactly do you do for a living, Peter, my boy?
Right. I deal mainly with computers that are controlling machines, and in fact today I've been repairing a computer that's running a printing machine that prints crisp bags and so on. And
this is for which company?
This is for Courtauld's Packaging, as it is called now. It used to be called British Cellophane, but we make cellophane, plastic films, bonded fibre fabrics, and several other advanced materials, I like to call it these days.
Now, you get up to all kinds of industrial process control things, don't you? Weren't you telling me about some amazing thing which you discovered, allow the patent rights over to cellophane. What are you talking about, printing very thin films of stuff on?
Oh, that's right. Because I work for the research labs in for Courtauld's Packaging. On certain projects, I have to put the patents over if I discover anything interesting. And one thing we're looking at the moment is putting very small holes in films. Things. The holes themselves are about 75 micrometers in diameter, which is quite difficult, and we're doing it with a special type of laser, but I'm not allowed to say any more. Something else I've been working on is a robotic cylinder store. With our printing company, each printing job takes 8 printing cylinders, and each of these weighs about 150 kilograms, and we've got about 2,500 of these cylinders that up to now have been distributed over a very large area of the factory. We've actually got what looks like a gigantic scaffolding frame with a three-dimensional crane, all controlled by a Z80, believe it or not. And this will have 400 tons, roughly, of cylinders in it when it's full up. And it only takes 2 minutes to get any given cylinder out. So that's quite fun.
Amazing stuff. Anyway, Laura, you mentioned the Z80. What is your interest in computers in terms of, well, PCs, shall we say?
Okay.
That's what it's all about.
Well, yes, that's right. I use PCs at work, mainly IBM compatibles, as everyone does these days. And they're quite useful, mainly for the expansion slots. We find that we can plug in any board and any sort of interface you want. You can buy it off the shelf and make it do any job. But I must admit, my own interest is in slightly more exotic machines based on the 68000, specifically the Atari ST.
That's the one you've got yourself, isn't it?
That's right. A lot of people laugh at Atari, thinking it's all games and not very serious. But when you consider you can get a megabyte of RAM, a 750K disk drive, and a monitor, a whole package, in fact, with a mouse for under £600, it makes the IBMs look rather expensive.
What's the portable you've just bought?
Oh, yes, I've just bought an Olivetti M15, which is an IBM-compatible, specifically for use at work, because I'm afraid our company is one that considers that 10 people per computer is quite normal. And, of course, when you need access to a computer, you want it now, not sort of 3 days' time when you've booked up some time in the queue.
We're still trying to get that to talk with Hal, aren't we?
That's right. The problem being the 3.5-inch discs, of course, because all of Roger's software comes on 5.25-inch discs.
We mustn't say too much about that in front of Dolphy, but we are pushing it out. We could, in fact, get a 3.5-inch mini to see if it'll work, but we've been playing with this, but we haven't come up with the results yet.
No. Well, when we get it working, perhaps we can put it on tape.
Indeed we will. Oh, yes, most certainly.
Yeah.
But you've got interest in all sorts of other things as well, communications and this sort of thing, haven't you?
That's right. I haven't got my modem going yet. It's all wired up, but I haven't taken the plunge yet and started running up my father's phone bill. But I think it's working. It's just a matter of trying it out.
You've also been doing the rounds of the exhibitions and so on, so there are some interviews on tape which we might make use of in future, yes?
That's right, yeah. We've put some of the Nadex exhibition on this month's Talking Magazine that Roger and I are involved with.
And the voices in the background are, in fact, the tail end of the committee meeting, which we've chosen a very good venue. We've come to the Maypole Inn, a little place just outside of Bridgewater, and we've had a couple of pints over the meeting and a little buffet, and it's been most enjoyable. You are going to be responsible for returning the first tapes for the Whistler, is that right?
That's right. I think Dave Calderwood is going to give everyone my address.
I don't need to call him our editor or our compiler. I said that in a little thing which I did for him. But anyway, he's putting this whole thing together. It's all his fault. You know, any complaints, you just don't contact us. You just call Mr. Calderwood.
Yeah. But anyway, I haven't received any tapes yet, so hopefully it'll all start happening before long.
One hopes so. He's been looking for a signature tune. We thought about the theme music for 2001, but I think David ultimately picked on a bit of jazz. It was Take the A Train by Humphrey Littleton, or played by Humphrey Littleton, it's a Duke Ellington thing. He thought he'd paraphrase it as Take the A Prompt. He's probably said that already on this tape, but anyway, we're gonna push this over in his direction, and you've heard from me, Roger Goodchild, you've heard from Pete, and we're all here to, well, help with inquiries or any interesting comments. Is that not so?
Well, that's right.
They've got your address, because that's where the tapes are going to.
That's right. And I'd be specifically interested, from reasons you've already heard, of anyone who's using anything that's not IBM compatible for speech synthesis, etc. Because it's very easy, it seems to me, to get the talking screen readers and so on for IBMs, but everyone else seems to be leaving out the Macintoshes and the Amigas and so on. So
certainly people using them.
Well, yeah.
And weren't you telling me at one time about the IBM mouse, which was designed to produce a sort of braille cell on top of the thing?
Well, that's
configurations
right.
Configurations of dots.
That's right. In fact, we talked to somebody at Nadex, and he seemed to think that IBM have delayed production on that for a while, for some reason or other, political, I expect. But basically, it was just a single braille cell on top of a mouse. And as you scan the mouse from left to right, it mimics what's on the screen. So it feels just like you're reading a row of Braille. But in fact, you've only got one single Braille cell there. Very clever.
It sounds extremely clever. I'd love to have a look at one of those. Perhaps some of us should get onto IBM and find out just what they're doing about this. After all, the mouse so far is not really open to us, is it?
No. That's right. I mean, I use a mouse in my Atari, but that's specifically for moving a pointer around the screen. And it's just an input device, basically. But, yeah, talking about phoning at IBM, I've had to do that in the past for work. And it is the most horrendous hierarchical organization you can ever come across. You get moved through about seven different departments before you get to somebody who tells you that the bloke you want isn't in.
Have a nice day. So,
that's right. Ah, well.
Well, there we are. There's us two here in Bridgewater, and, you know, we're always here for any inquiries. It's gone quiet. They've all gone. Our committee has departed.
That's right, yes. Well,
it must be closing time.
That's right. We're still the two alcoholics in the corner there, though.
Oh, watch it.
You might even hear from her in due course.
Yes.
That's Sue, Pete's girlfriend, and she's been doing some interviewing, so, well, we might dig out something from the exhibitions where she's been in attendance. The other one's not speaking. He's under the table, I tell you now.
Yes. Sue said she's available as a test pilot of any new computers or equipment that comes out.
There we are. Well, we'll leave it at that, Mr. Editor, Mr. Compiler. Another couple of voices for the magazine, and we are looking forward to the first issue, and we want a lot of demand for it, so get the tapes rolling in, good people.
Okay, see you whenever we do.
Indeed.
Cheerio!
Well, thank you very much indeed, Roger and Pete and Sue in the background. Having made comments about both Courtaulds and IBM, I expect to have a very interesting mailbag for our solicitor to deal with. Something that our solicitor won't have to deal with is the length of the TDK D60 tape. Because advertised at being 60 minutes in length, I've just gone back to listen to side one and found that it's 31 minutes 21 seconds long, which is great, good old TDK. However, anyone who has sent in a shorter cassette, which has only 30 minutes on each side, will have missed the last little bit, so would you bear with me whilst I just repeat those that address that I gave you for Dolphin? It's Dolphin Systems for the Disabled, Box 83, Worcester, and the postcode is WR12RN. And if you want to speak to Peter Diamond, then the number is 0905, which is the postcode for Worcester, 723654. That's during office hours, but there is an answer phone machine. I explained at the end of side one that Rita and I hope to be moving to our new bungalow in the middle of September, so I'm loath to give you my current address and telephone number. So if you want to find out at any time, please give Peter Diamond a buzz at Dolphin, and he'll tell you the most recent and up-to-date information so that you can get through to me. And please don't forget that I'm here between 9 and 5, Monday to Friday, to give any help or advice in any way I can to you. So please don't hesitate to give me a buzz. And maybe at this point I should give you Roger Goodchild's telephone number as well. His home number is 0278 423550, and that's his home number. So after 6 to get to Roger. Not too late, please, for Roger's sake. And also Pete Mead's address. If you sent off for this cassette yourself, then obviously you will know Pete Mead's address, but if it's been passed to you by somebody else, or a recording of it made by somebody else and passed on to you, if you want to have an issue of The Whistler, then please send a good quality C60, and I've just given TDK an advertisement with their D60 cassettes because they're nice and long. In the standard RNIB postal wallet with Pete's address on one side of the card and your own home address on the other side of the card. Send that off to the address I give you now, and Pete will send you a copy forthwith. The address is number 1515 Park Close, Cossington, that's Cossington, Bridgewater, Somerset, and the postcode is TA7, that's Tango Alpha 7, 8LG, 8 Lima Golf. If you've enjoyed this first issue of Whistler, and you want issue 2, which is due out in December, then please let Pete have your cassette back by the end of November. Then Roger and he can get the fast copier out and get them all done during the first week of December, bearing in mind the Christmas post, of course. My goodness me, there's me mentioning Christmas and it's still only August. And if you like the Whistler, please let us know. If you don't like it, there's no need to ask you to let us know, because from previous experience, I know that will be the case. I produced and edited the tape magazine Computer Talk for the VDU group, specialising in BBC computers. Did that for 3 years, and I know only too well that there's no need to appeal for complaints. But if you like the Whistler, let us know. And if you'd like to contribute to the Whistler, then please send me articles on cassette between, say, 5 and 15 minutes long. If they are a bit too long, I might have to edit them down. But it would be really interesting to know what you're doing with your computer, and any hints or tips or anything like that that you've got for others that you'd like to pass on, well, please do so, because I really do hope that the Whistler is going to be a very active forum amongst computer users, so that we can all share and benefit from each other's experiences. Thank you. And just finally, we've almost finished with all the admin. Just finally, if you do send something in on cassette, please can you make it as good a recording quality as possible? No worse, please, than that first recording I made at the beginning of Side 1, when I went down to Somerset to interview Roger. That was a poor quality tape recorder that I was using. It was just a pocket memo with an external microphone, actually. And it really it's only just good enough for a magazine like this, because it has to be copied onto this master tape and then fast duplicated onto your tape, and a lot of quality is lost. So please, as good a quality as possible on just standard format, not on APH quarter track format, please. And that's it. No more boring admin notices. May I mention another computer group to you which you might consider joining? It's run by Dr. Mike Townsend, and it's called the VIP CUG, not the very important persons, the Visually Impaired Personal Computer User Group. And if you want to contact Mike, then his address is Dr. Mike Townsend, VIP CUG, The Manor House, Fleckney, that's FLECKNEY, Fleckney, and that's in Leicestershire, and the postcode is LE8, that's Lima Echo 8, 0AP, Alpha Papa, and the telephone number is 0533 403 14. Oh, my braille is a bit flattened there. It's 7147. But be warned, Mike is an extremely busy man. I've been told that 6:30 in the evening is usually the best time to catch him, but as I'm usually not around at that time, I've not actually spoken to him on the telephone. So I think the subscription is still £5 per annum. Looking at my Braille telephone directory just then has reminded me that you might be interested to know who can see and who can't on this tape. Well, Roger Goodchild, Sue, that's Pete's girlfriend, Mike Townsend, and myself, we're all totally blind. But Pete Mead can see, as can the two who keep Dolphin Systems ticking over and producing new developments, all sorts of new exciting things. That's Peter Diamond and Paul Blenkhorn. So that puts you in the picture, just in case you are interested. Now, if you can see, and you're computer literate, then the Talking Newspaper Association of the United Kingdom would like to hear from you. I've been badgering them for some time to see whether they'll get a PC magazine onto tape for us. They already do one for the BBC computer, the micro user, but it's about time we had one which dealt with PC, something like PC Plus, a monthly magazine, which I get and is an excellent magazine, but I've got to have somebody to read it to me. So if that idea appeals to you, then why not give the Tanork people a buzz? Being a monthly magazine, there's no problems. You could record it at home and send the cassette off to them and they would duplicate it. They must have a minimum of 10 subscribers before they'll start a new magazine, but I don't think there'd be any problem at all in getting 10 subscribers for PC Plus. So let me give you their telephone number. It's 0435 26102.
Borland International Manuals on Disc for the Blind. Borland International are pleased to announce the release of manuals on disc for the blind. The manuals on disc will be furnished to the user with the compliments of our president, Philip Kahn. The products available on disc include Turbo Lightning, Word Wizard, GameWorks 3.0, Sidekick, SuperKey, Turbo Tutor 2.0, Turbo Pascal V4.0, Toolboxes for Version 3.0, Reflex Workshop, Turbo Prologue 1.0, Turbo Pascal 3.0, Turbo Basic, and Turbo C 1.0. To order any of the above manuals on disc, the customer needs to follow the following procedure. A letter should be sent to Borland Customer Services, Borland International UK Limited, 8 Pavilions, Ruscombe Business Park, Twyford, Berkshire, RG10 9NN. Requesting the manual on disc which is required and quoting the serial number of the software it is related to.
Good news for us all there from Borland. I must say that Turbo Lightning and Turbo Pascal are excellent. Another person who I would describe as being excellent is Mike Cassidy. And I asked Mike for the latest lowdown on teletext for the PC.
I was talking to the bods at General Information Systems of Croxton, Cambridge this afternoon, and they say that the teletext card for the PC should be out in October or thereabouts. He said actually at the end of September or early October. We have been hearing this, that the card will be available shortly, since April. And the reason he gave for the further delay is the fact that there is not much software written for the card yet. There is a whole wealth of software now written for the BBC teletext system. And if the PC software proves as good, then we will be very fortunate. So I think that is the main reason for the delay. Anyway, what I can tell you about the card is that it will have full automatic tuning on the card. I assume there'll be an aerial connection on the card, on the back of the card, rather similar to those used for modems. And how one will tune it, whether it requires software tuning or hardware tuning, I don't know. But no doubt it will have non-volatile memory to hold the tunings when you switch off, and so it will make life very easy indeed. The other advantage that it has over the BBC Teletext system is that the BBC system will grab up to 20 pages at a time. The PC card will be able to grab up to 40 pages at a time. And that could prove very useful for downloads to disk filing system and will make life much quicker than on the BBC. As for terminal page handling, well, I suppose not an awful lot of difference, except that it will be able to store a lot more pages, so you might well be able to move from page to page more quickly. That's about all. They haven't released any documentation yet because it hasn't as yet been approved by the BEEB. They have to approve it and to give it their name, of course. So there is no official documentation yet. But as I say, it should be out October. We'll keep you posted. The price is as near £200 as you can get. They quoted £199 plus £2 P&P. And that is inclusive of VAT, so £201 or thereabouts. It's not cheap. Depends how nutty you go on teletext, I guess. I think for visually impaired people it's a real good thing to get into. You don't pay for anything once you've got it. You get all the news, views, information and everything free. You get your software free. So, I think certainly, from the point of view of information gathering, is the way for us to go. And we always compare teletext with communications, telecommunications. There's no way I would go for information gathering for telecommunications, it's just too expensive. Useful for getting messages across quickly, I suppose. And for transferring files to your mates if you so need to. But for news gathering? Oh, teletext far and away.
Ah, spoken like a true teletext man. Many thanks indeed for that report, Mike. Rather remiss of me, actually, not to have given Mike a better introduction. Mike Cassidy is, in fact, a blind physio from the East Coast and a very keen computer buff, both on the PC and the Beeb. He's secretary of the VDU group, and any advice on Beebs or PCs, Mike's the man to go for. And the telephone number of his home in Great Yarmouth is 0493 662 714. And again, I should say on Mike's behalf, telephone calls not too late in the evening, please. And perhaps I should add, as an afterthought, for those of you who are not familiar with the concept of teletext, that both the BBC and ITV have information channels called Oracle and CFAX, and it's possible for you to get on a specially designed television all sorts of information up on the screen in text form. Different things which vary from, well, news headlines, sports scores, right the way through to several pages actually on computers, forming a little computer magazine. And, of course, sighted people can sit back and and read these when there's not much on the television. And for us, it's particularly advantageous, as Mike was saying, to be able to glean this information via our computers and through either speech or large print displays, gain access to this valuable source of material. It'd be rather nice actually to send it straight out and emboss it in Braille, and I suppose you'd have the nearest thing to a daily Braille newspaper if you were to do that. So that's Teletext. Many thanks, Mike. Well, folks, my time is rapidly running out. At this point, I should mention that Dolphin Systems cannot accept responsibility for any other products mentioned in this magazine, only their own, and of course that the views expressed in this magazine are not necessarily the views of Dolphin Systems for the Disabled. Well, now, if you pop the tape back into the post so that it gets back to Pete before the beginning of December, then hopefully you'll get issue 2 before Christmas. Hope that you've enjoyed issue 1. Give me a little bit of feedback. If you've got any articles that you'd like to submit, send them to me. I'd be only too grateful to have a listen to them and include them in future issues. So, there we are. That's it. My time is up. Thanks for listening. So from me, David Calderwood, it's bye-bye for now. Bye-bye. ¶¶